he needed weapons to go into the maze. A half hour later, fed and packed, they stood in front of the riveted metal door of the map room. Thomas was itching to go inside. Dawn had burst forth in all her glory, and gladers milled about, readying for the day. Smells of frying bacon wafted through the air. Frypan and his crew trying to keep up with dozens of starving stomachs. Minho unlocked the door, cranked the wheel handle, spinning it until an audible click sounded from inside, then pulled. With a lurching squeal, the heavy metal slab swung open. "After you," Minho said with a mocking bow. Thomas went in without saying anything. A cool fear mixed with an intense curiosity gripped him, and he had to remind himself to breathe. The dark room had a musty, wet smell, laced with a deep, coppery scent so strong he could taste it. A distant, faded memory of sucking on pennies as a kid popped into his head. Minho hit a switch, and several rows of fluorescent lights flickered until they came on full strength, revealing the room in detail. Thomas was surprised at its simplicity. About 20 feet across, the map room had concrete walls bare of any decoration. A wooden table stood in the exact center, 8 chairs tucked in around it. Neatly stacked piles of paper and pencils lay about the table's surface, 1 for each chair. The only other items in the room were 8 trunks, just like the one containing the knives in the weapons basement. Closed, they were evenly spaced, 2 to a wall. "Welcome to the map room," Minho said. "As happy a place as you could ever visit." Thomas was slightly disappointed. He'd been expecting something more profound. He took in a deep breath. "Too bad it smells like an abandoned copper mine. I kind of like the smell." Minho pulled out 2 chairs and sat in one of them. "Have a seat. I want you to get a couple of images in your head before we go out there." As Thomas sat down, Minho grabbed a piece of paper and a pencil and started drawing. Thomas leaned in to get a better look and saw that Minho had drawn a big box that filled almost the entire page. Then he filled it with smaller boxes until it looked exactly like an enclosed tic-tac-toe board, 3 rows of 3 squares, all the same size. He wrote the word "glade" in the middle, then numbered the outside squares from 1 to 8, starting in the upper left corner and going clockwise. Lastly, he drew little notches here and there. "These are the doors," Minho said. "You know about the ones from the glade, but there are 4 more out in the maze that lead to sections 1, 3, 5, and 7. They stay in the same spot, but the route there changes with the wall movements every night." He finished, then slid the paper over to rest in front of Thomas. Thomas picked it up, completely fascinated that the maze was so structured, and studied it as Minho kept talking. "So we have the glade, surrounded by 8 sections, each one a completely self-contained square and unsolvable in the 2 years since we began this freaking game. The only thing even approaching an exit is the cliff, and that ain't a very good one unless you like falling to a horrible death." Minho tapped the map. "The walls move all over the Shuck place every evening, same time as our doors close shut. At least, we think that's when, because we never really hear walls moving any other time." Thomas looked up, happy to be able to offer a piece of information. "I didn't see anything move that night we got stuck out there. Those main corridors right outside the doors don't ever change. It's just the ones a little deeper out." "Oh." Thomas returned to the crude map, trying to visualize the maze and see stone walls where Minho had penciled lines. "We always have at least 8 runners, including the keeper. 1 for each section. It takes us a whole day to map out our area, hoping against hope there's an exit. Then we come back and draw it up, a separate page for each day." Minho glanced over at one of the trunks. "That's why those things are shuck full of maps." Thomas had a depressing and scary thought. "Am I replacing someone? Did somebody get killed?" Minho shook his head. "No, we're just training you. Someone'll probably want a break. Don't worry. It's been a while since a runner was killed." For some reason, that last statement worried Thomas, though he hoped it didn't show on his face. He pointed at Section 3. "So, It takes you a whole day to run through these little squares?
Hilarious!
Minho stood up and stepped over to the trunk right behind him, knelt down, then lifted the lid and rested it against the wall.
Come here.
Thomas had already gotten up. He leaned over Minho's shoulder and took a look. The trunk was large enough that four stacks of maps could fit, and all four reached the top. Each of the ones Thomas could see were very similar, a rough sketch of a square maze, filling almost the whole page. In the top right corners, Section 8 was scribbled, followed by the name Hank, then the word Day, followed by a number. The latest one said it was day number 749. Minho continued,
"We figured out the walls were moving right at the beginning, and soon as we did, we started keeping track. We've always thought that comparing these day to day, week to week, would help us figure out a pattern. And we did. The mazes basically repeat themselves about every month. But we've yet to see an exit open up that will lead us out of the square. Never been an exit."
"It's been 2 years," Thomas said. "Haven't you gotten desperate enough to stay out there overnight? See if maybe something opens while the walls are moving?" Minho looked up at him, a flash of anger in his eyes.
"That's kind of insulting, dude. Seriously."
"What?" Thomas was shocked. He hadn't meant it that way.
"We've been busting our butts for 2 years, and all you can ask is why we're too sissy to stay out there all night. A few tried it in the very beginning. All of them showed up dead. You want to spend another night out there? Like your chances of surviving again, do you?"
Thomas's face reddened in shame. "No, sorry." He suddenly felt like a piece of clunk. And he certainly agreed. He'd much rather come home safe and sound to the glade every night than ensure another battle with the Grievers. He shuddered at the thought.
"Yeah, well."
Minho returned his gaze to the maps in the trunk, much to Thomas's relief.
"Life in the glade might not be sweet living, but at least it's safe. Plenty of food, protection from the Grievers. There's no way we can ask the runners to risk staying out there. No way. At least, not yet. Not until something about these patterns gives a clue that an exit might open up, even temporarily. Are you close? Anything developing?"
Minho shrugged.
"I don't know. It's kind of depressing, but we don't know what else to do. Can't take a chance that one day, in one spot, somewhere, an exit might appear. We can't give up. Ever."
Thomas nodded, relieved at the attitude. As bad as things were, giving up would only make them worse. Minho pulled several sheets from the trunk, the maps from the last few days. As he flipped through them, he explained,
"We compared day to day, week to week, month to month, just like I was saying. Each runner is in charge of the map for his own section. If I gotta be honest, we haven't figured out Jack yet. Even more honest, we don't know what we're looking for. Really sucks, dude. Really freaking sucks."
"But we can't give up," Thomas said in a matter-of-fact tone, as a resigned repeat of what Minho had said a moment earlier. He'd said, "we," without even thinking about it, and realized he was truly part of the glade now.
"Right on, bro. We can't give up."
Minho carefully returned the papers and closed the trunk, then stood.
"Well, we gotta bust it fast since we took time in here. You'll just be following me around your first few days. Ready?"
Thomas felt a wire of nervousness tighten inside him, pinching his gut. It was actually here. They were going for real now, no more talking and thinking about it.
Yeah. No ums around here. You ready or not?
Thomas looked at Minho, matched his suddenly hard gaze.
"I'm ready. Then let's go running."
Chapter 33. They went through the west door into Section 8 and made their way down several corridors, Thomas right beside Minho as he turned right and left without seeming to think about it, running all the while. The early morning light had a sharp sheen about it, making everything look bright and crisp, the ivy, the cracked walls, the stone blocks of the ground. Though the sun had a few hours before hitting the noon spot up above, there was plenty of light to see by. Thomas kept up with Minho as best he could, having to sprint every once in a while to catch back up.
They finally made it to a rectangular cut in a long wall to the north that looked like a doorway without a door. Minho ran straight through it without stopping.
"This leads from Section 8, the middle left square, to Section 1, the top left square. Like I said, this passage is always in the same spot, but the route here might be a little different because of the walls rearranging themselves."
Thomas followed him, surprised at how heavy his breaths had already become. He hoped it was only jitters, that his breathing would steady soon. They ran down a long corridor to the right, passing several turns to the left. When they reached the end of the passage, Minho slowed to barely more than a walk and reached behind him to pull out a notepad and pencil from a side pocket in his backpack. He jotted a note, then put them back, never fully stopping. Thomas wondered what he'd written, but Minho answered him before he could pose the question.
"I rely mostly on memory,"
the keeper huffed, his voice finally showing a hint of strain.
"But about every fifth turn, I write something down to help me later. Mostly just related to stuff from yesterday. What's different today? Then I can use yesterday's map to make today's. Easy peasy, dude."
Thomas was intrigued. Minho did make it sound easy. They ran for a short while before they reached an intersection. They had three possible choices, but Minho went to the right without hesitating. As he did so, he pulled one of his knives from a pocket and, without missing a beat, cut a big piece of ivy off the wall. He threw it on the ground behind him and kept running.
"Breadcrumbs?"
Thomas asked, the old fairy tale popping into his mind. Such odd glimpses of his past had almost stopped surprising him.
"Breadcrumbs," Minho replied. "I'm Hansel. You're Gretel."
On they went, following the course of the maze, sometimes turning right, sometimes turning left. After every turn, Minho cut and dropped a 3-foot length of ivy. Thomas couldn't help being impressed. Minho didn't even need to slow down to do it.
"All right," the keeper said, breathing heavier now. "Your turn." "What?"
Thomas hadn't really expected to do anything but run and watch on his first day.
"Cut the ivy now. You gotta get used to doing it on the run. We pick 'em up as we come back, or kick 'em to the side."
Thomas was happier than he thought he'd be at having something to do, though it took him a while to become good at it. First couple of times, he had to sprint to catch up after cutting the ivy, and once he nicked his finger. But by his 10th attempt, he could almost match Minho at the task. On they went. After they'd run a while, Thomas had no idea for how long or how far, but he guessed 3 miles, Minho slowed to a walk, then stopped altogether.
"Break time."
He swung off his pack and pulled out some water and an apple. Thomas didn't have to be convinced to follow Minho's lead. He guzzled his water, relishing the wet coolness as it washed down his dry throat.
"Slow down there, fishhead," Minho yelped. "Save some for later."
Thomas stopped drinking, sucked in a big, satisfied breath, then burped. He took a bite of his apple, feeling surprisingly refreshed. For some reason, his thoughts turned back to the day Minho and Albi had gone to look at the dead griever, when everything had gone to clunk.
"You never really told me what happened to Albi that day, why he was in such bad shape. Obviously the griever woke up, but what happened?"
Minho had already put his backpack on. He looked ready to go.
"Well, Shuck Thing wasn't dead. Albi poked at it with his foot like an idiot, and that bad boy suddenly sprang to life, spikes flaring, its fat body rolling all over him. Something was wrong with it, though. Didn't really attack like usual. It seemed like it was mostly just trying to get out of there, and poor Albi was in the way."
"So it ran away from you guys?" From what Thomas had seen only a few nights before, he couldn't imagine it. Minho shrugged.
"Yeah, I guess. Maybe it needed to get recharged or something. I don't know."
"What could have been wrong with it? Did you see an injury or anything?" Thomas didn't know what kind of answer he was searching for, but he was sure there had to be a clue or lesson to learn from what happened. Minho thought for a minute.
"No, Shuck Thing just looked dead, like a wax statue. Then boom, it was back to life."
Thomas's mind was churning, trying to get somewhere, only he didn't know where or which direction to even start in.
I just wonder where it went. Where they always go. Don't you?
He was quiet for a second, then, haven't you ever thought of following them?
Man, you do have a death wish, don't you? Come on, we gotta go.
And with that, Minho turned and started running. As Thomas followed, he struggled to figure out what was tickling the back of his mind. Something about that griever being dead and then not dead. Something about where it had gone once it sprang to life. Frustrated, he put it aside and sprinted to catch up. Thomas ran right behind Minho for 2 more hours, sprinkled with little breaks that seemed to get shorter every time. Good shape or not, Thomas was feeling the pain. Finally, Minho stopped and pulled off his backpack once more. They sat on the ground, leaning against the soft ivy as they ate lunch, neither one of them talking much. Thomas relished every bite of his sandwich and veggies, eating as slowly as possible. He knew Minho would make them get up and go once the food disappeared, so he took his time.
"Anything different today?" Thomas asked, curious.
Minho reached down and patted his backpack, where his notes rested.
"Just the usual wall movements. Nothing to get your skinny butt excited about."
Thomas took a long swig of water, looking up at the ivy-covered wall opposite them. He caught a flash of silver and red, something he'd seen more than once that day.
"What's the big deal with those beetle blades?" he asked.
"They seem to be everywhere." Then Thomas remembered what he'd seen in the maze. So much had happened he hadn't had the chance to mention it.
"And why do they have the word wicked written on their backs?"
"Never been able to catch one." Minho finished up his meal and put his lunchbox away.
"And we don't know what that word means. Probably just something to scare us. But they have to be spies.
For them.
Only thing we can reckon."
"Who is them, anyway?" Thomas asked, ready for more answers. He hated the people behind the maze. "Anybody have a clue?"
"We don't know jack about the stupid creators."
Minho's face reddened as he squeezed his hands together like he was choking someone.
"Can't wait to rip their—"
But before the keeper could finish, Thomas was on his feet and across the corridor.
"What's that?"
he interrupted, heading for a dull glimmer of gray he'd just noticed behind the ivy on the wall, about head high.
"Oh yeah, that,"
Minho said, his voice completely indifferent. Thomas reached in and pulled apart the curtains of ivy, then stared blankly at a square of metal riveted to the stone with words stamped across it in big capital letters. He put his hand out to run his fingers across them, as if he didn't believe his eyes. "World in Catastrophe. Kill Zone Experiment Department." He read the words aloud, then looked back at Minho.
"What's this?"
It gave him a chill. It had to have something to do with the creators.
"I don't know, Shank. They're all over the place, like freaking labels for the nice pretty maze they built. I quit bothering to look at them a long time ago."
Thomas turned back to stare at the sign, trying to suppress the feeling of doom that had risen inside him.
"Not much here that sounds very good. Catastrophe? Kill Zone? Experiment?
Real nice."
"Yeah, real nice, Greeny. Let's go."
Reluctantly, Thomas let the vines fall back into place and swung his backpack over his shoulders. And off they went, those 6 words burning holes in his mind. An hour after lunch, Minho stopped at the end of a long corridor. It was straight, the walls solid, with no hallways branching off.
"The last dead end," he said to Thomas.
"Time to go back." Thomas sucked in a deep breath, trying not to think about only being halfway done for the day.
"Nothing new?"
"Just the usual changes to the way we got here. Day's half over," Minho replied as he looked at his watch emotionlessly.
"Gotta go back."
Without waiting for a response, the keeper turned and set off at a run in the direction from which they'd just come. Thomas followed, frustrated that they couldn't take time to examine the walls, explore a little. He finally pulled in stride with Minho.
"But just shut it, dude. Remember what I said earlier. Can't take any chances. Plus, think about it. You really think there's an exit anywhere? A secret trap door or something?
I don't know. Maybe. Why do you ask it that way?
Minho shook his head, spat a big wad of something nasty to his left.
There's no exit. It's just more of the same. A wall is a wall is a wall. Solid.
Thomas felt the heavy truth of it, but pushed back anyway.
How do you know?
Because people willing to send grievers after us aren't going to give us an easy way out.
This made Thomas doubt the whole point of what they were doing.
Then why even bother coming out here?
Minho looked over at him.
Why bother?
Because it's here. Gotta be a reason.
But if you think we're going to find a nice little gate that leads to Happy Town, you're smoking cow clunk.
Thomas looked straight ahead, feeling so hopeless he almost slowed to a stop.
This sucks.
Smartest thing you've said yet, Greenie.
Minho blew out a big puff of air and kept running, and Thomas did the only thing he knew to do. He followed. The rest of the day was a blur of exhaustion to Thomas. He and Minho made it back to the glade, went to the map room, wrote up the day's maze route, compared it to the previous days. Then there were the walls closing and dinner. Chuck tried talking to him several times, but all Thomas could do was nod and shake his head, only half-hearing, he was so tired. Before twilight faded to blackness, he was already in his new favorite spot in the forest corner, curled up against the ivy, wondering if he could ever run again. Wondering how he could possibly do the same thing tomorrow, especially when it seemed so pointless. Being a runner had lost its glamour. After one day. Every ounce of the noble courage he'd felt, the will to make a difference, the promise to himself to reunite Chuck with his family, it all vanished into an exhausted fog of hopelessness, wretched weariness. He was somewhere very close to sleep when a voice spoke in his head, a pretty, feminine voice that sounded as if it came from a fairy goddess trapped in his skull. The next morning, when everything started going crazy, he'd wonder if the voice had been real or part of a dream. But he heard it all the same, and remembered every word.
Tom, I just triggered the ending.
Chapter 34. Thomas awoke to a weak, lifeless light. His first thought was that he must have gotten up earlier than usual, that dawn was still an hour away. But then he heard the shouts, and then he looked up through the leafy canopy of branches. The sky was a dull slab of gray, not the natural pale light of morning. He jumped to his feet, put his hand on the wall to steady himself as he craned his neck to gawk toward the heavens. There was no blue, no black, no stars, no purplish fan of a creeping dawn. The sky, every last inch of it, was slate gray, colorless and dead. He looked down at his watch. It was a full hour past his mandatory waking time. The brilliance of the sun should have awakened him, had done so easily since he'd arrived at the glade. But not today. He glanced upward again, half expecting it to have changed back to normal. But it was all gray. Not cloudy, not twilight, not the early minutes of dawn. Just gray. The sun had disappeared. Thomas found most of the gladers standing near the entrance to the box, pointing at the dead sky, everyone talking at once. Based on the time, breakfast should have already been served. People should be working. But there was something about the largest object in the solar system vanishing that tended to disrupt normal schedules. In truth, as Thomas silently watched the commotion, he didn't feel nearly as panicked or frightened as his instincts told him he ought to be. And it surprised him that so many of the others looked like lost chicks thrown from the coop. It was, in fact, ridiculous. The sun had obviously not disappeared. That wasn't possible. Though that was what it seemed like, signs of the ball of furious fire nowhere to be seen, the slanting shadows of morning absent. But he and all the gladers were far too rational and intelligent to conclude such a thing. No, there had to be a scientifically acceptable reason for what they were witnessing. And whatever it was, to Thomas it meant one thing. The fact they could no longer see the sun probably meant they'd never been able to in the first place.
A sun couldn't just disappear. Their sky had to have been, and still was, fabricated. Artificial. In other words, the sun that had shone down on these people for 2 years, providing heat and life to everything, was not the sun at all. Somehow, it had been fake. Everything about this place was fake. Thomas didn't know what that meant, didn't know how it was possible. But he knew it to be true. It was the only explanation his rational mind could accept. And it was obvious from the other Glader's reactions that none of them had figured this out until now. Chuck found him, and the look of fear on the boy's face pinched Thomas's heart.
"What do you think happened?"
Chuck said, a pitiful tremor in his voice, his eyes glued to the sky. Thomas thought his neck must hurt something awful.
"Looks like a big gray ceiling, close enough you could almost touch it."
Thomas followed Chuck's gaze and looked up. "Yeah, makes you wonder about this place." For the second time in 24 hours, Chuck had nailed it. The sky did look like a ceiling, like the ceiling of a massive room. "Maybe something's broken. I mean, maybe it'll be back." Chuck finally quit gawking and made eye contact with Thomas.
"Broken? What's that supposed to mean?"
Before Thomas could answer, the faint memory of last night, before he fell asleep, came to him. Teresa's words inside his mind. She'd said, "I just triggered the ending." It couldn't be a coincidence, could it? A sour rot crept into his belly. Whatever the explanation, whatever that had been in the sky, the real sun or not, it was gone. And that couldn't be a good thing.
"Thomas?"
Chuck asked, lightly tapping him on the upper arm.
"Yeah?"
Thomas's mind felt hazy.
"What did you mean by broken?" Chuck repeated.
Thomas felt like he needed time to think about it all.
"Oh, I don't know. Must be things about this place we obviously don't understand. But you can't just make the sun disappear from space. Plus, there's still enough light to see by, as faint as it is. Where's that coming from?"
Chuck's eyes widened, as if the darkest, deepest secret of the universe had just been revealed to him.
"Yeah, where is it coming from? What's going on, Thomas?"
Thomas reached out and squeezed the younger boy's shoulder. He felt awkward.
"No clue, Chuck. Not a clue. But I'm sure Newt and Albie'll figure things out."
"Thomas!" Min Ho was running up to them. "Quit your leisure time with Chucky here and let's get going. We're already late." Thomas was stunned. For some reason, he'd expected the weird sky to throw all normal plans out the window.
"You're still going out there?"
Chuck asked, clearly surprised as well. Thomas was glad the boy had asked the question for him.
"Of course we are, Shank," Min Ho said. "Don't you have some slapping to do?"
He looked from Chuck to Thomas.
"If anything, gives us even more reason to get our butts out there. If the sun's really gone, won't be long before plants and animals drop dead, too. I think the desperation level just went up a notch."
The last statement struck Thomas deep down. Despite all his ideas, all the things he'd pitched to Min Ho, he wasn't eager to change how things had been done for the last 2 years. A mixture of excitement and dread swept over him when he realized what Min Ho was saying.
"You mean we're going to stay out there overnight?
Explore the walls a little more closely?"
Min Ho shook his head. "No, not yet. Maybe soon, though."
He looked up toward the sky.
"Man, what a way to wake up. Come on, let's go."
Thomas was quiet as he and Min Ho got their things ready and ate a lightning-fast breakfast. His thoughts were churning too much about the gray sky and what Teresa, at least he thought it had been the girl, had told him in his mind to participate in any conversation.
What had she meant by the ending?
Thomas couldn't knock the feeling that he should tell somebody. Everybody. But he didn't know what it meant, and he didn't want them to know he had a girl's voice in his head. They'd think he'd really gone bonkers, maybe even lock him up, and for good this time. After a lot of deliberation, he decided to keep his mouth shut and went running with Min Ho for his second day of training, below a bleak and colorless sky. They saw the Griever before they'd even made it to the door leading from Section 8 to Section 1. Minho was a few feet ahead of Thomas. He'd just rounded a corner to the right when he slammed to a stop, his feet almost skidding out from under him. He jumped back and grabbed Thomas by the shirt, pushing him against the wall.
"Shh," Minho whispered. "There's a freaking Griever up there."
Thomas widened his eyes in question, felt his heart pick up the pace, even though it had already been pumping hard and steady. Minho simply nodded, then put his finger to his lips. He let go of Thomas's shirt and took a step back, then crept up to the corner around which he'd seen the Griever. Very slowly, he leaned forward to take a peek. Thomas wanted to scream at him to be careful. Minho's head jerked back, and he turned to face Thomas. His voice was still a whisper.
"It's just sitting up there, almost like that dead one we saw." "What do we do?"
Thomas asked, as quietly as possible. He tried to ignore the panic flaring inside him.
"Is it coming toward us?" "No, idiot. I just told you it was sitting there." "Well?"
Thomas raised his hands to his sides in frustration.
"What do we do?"
Standing so close to a Griever seemed like a really bad idea. Minho paused a few seconds, thinking before he spoke.
"We have to go that way to get to our section. Let's just watch it a while. If it comes after us, we'll run back to the glade."
He took another peek, then quickly looked over his shoulder.
"Crap! It's gone! Come on!"
Minho didn't wait for a response, didn't see the look of horror Thomas had just felt widen his own eyes. Minho took off running in the direction where he'd seen the Griever. Though his instincts told him not to, Thomas followed. He sprinted down the long corridor after Minho, turned left, then right. At every turn, they slowed so the keeper could look around the corner first. Each time he whispered back to Thomas that he'd seen the tail end of the Griever disappearing around the next turn. This went on for 10 minutes, until they came to the long hallway that ended at the cliff, where beyond lay nothing but the lifeless sky. The Griever was charging toward that sky. Minho stopped so abruptly Thomas almost ran him over. Then Thomas stared in shock as up ahead, the Griever dug in with its spikes and spun forward right up to the cliff's edge, then off, into the gray abyss. The creature disappeared from sight, a shadow swallowed by more shadow. Chapter 35.
"That settles it," Minho said.
Thomas stood next to him on the edge of the cliff, staring at the gray nothingness beyond. There was no sign of anything, to the left, right, down, up, or ahead, for as far as he could see. Nothing but a wall of blankness.
"Settles what?" Thomas asked. "We've seen it 3 times now. Something's up."
"Yeah." Thomas knew what he meant, but waited for Minho's explanation anyway.
"That dead Griever I found, it ran this way, and we never saw it come back or go deeper into the maze. Then those suckers we tricked into jumping past us."
"Tricked?" Thomas said. "Maybe not such a trick." Minho looked over at him, contemplative.
Anyway, then this."
He pointed out at the abyss.
"Not much doubt anymore. Somehow the Grievers can leave the maze this way. Looks like magic, but so does the sun disappearing."
"If they can leave this way," Thomas added, continuing Minho's line of reasoning,
"so could we."
A thrill of excitement shot through him. Minho laughed.
"There's your death wish again. Want to hang out with the Grievers? Have a sandwich, maybe?"
Thomas felt his hopes drop.
"Got any better ideas?"
"One thing at a time, Greenie. Let's get some rocks and test this place out. There has to be some kind of hidden exit."
Thomas helped Minho as they scrabbled around the corners and crannies of the maze, picking up as many loose stones as possible. They got more by thumbing cracks in the wall, spilling broken chunks onto the ground. When they finally had a sizable pile, they hauled it over right next to the edge and took a seat, feet dangling over the side. Thomas looked down and saw nothing but a gray descent. Minho pulled out his pad and pencil, placed them on the ground next to him.
"All right, we gotta take good notes,
and memorize it in that Shuck head of yours, too. If there's some kind of optical illusion hiding an exit from this place, I don't want to be the one who screws up when the first Shank tries to jump into it.
That Shank ought to be the keeper of the runners, Thomas said, trying to make a joke to hide his fear. Being this close to a place where Grievers might come out at any second was making him sweat.
You'd want to hold on to one beauty of a rope.
Minho picked up a rock from their pile.
Yeah. Okay, let's take turns tossing them, zigzagging back and forth out there. If there's some kind of magical exit, hopefully it'll work with rocks, too. Make them disappear.
Thomas took a rock and carefully threw it to their left, just in front of where the left wall of the corridor leading to the cliff met the edge. The jagged piece of stone fell, and fell, then disappeared into the gray emptiness.
Minho went next. He tossed his rock just a foot or so farther out than Thomas had. It also fell far below.
Thomas threw another one, another foot out. Then Minho. Each rock fell to the depths.
Thomas kept following Minho's orders. They continued until they'd marked a line reaching at least a dozen feet from the cliff, then moved their target pattern a foot to the right and started coming back toward the maze.
All the rocks fell. Another line out, another line back. All the rocks fell.
They threw enough rocks to cover the entire left half of the area in front of them, covering the distance anyone, or anything, could possibly jump.
Thomas's discouragement grew with every toss, until it turned into a heavy mass of blah. He couldn't help chiding himself. It had been a stupid idea. Then, Minho's next rock disappeared. It was the strangest, most hard-to-believe thing Thomas had ever seen. Minho had thrown a large chunk, a piece that had fallen from one of the cracks in the wall. Thomas had watched, deeply concentrating on each and every rock. This one left Minho's hand, sailed forward, almost in the exact center of the cliff line, started its descent to the unseen ground far below. Then it vanished, as if it had fallen through a plane of water or mist. One second there, falling, next second, gone.
Thomas couldn't speak.
"We've thrown stuff off the cliff before," Minho said.
"How could we have ever missed that?
I never saw anything disappear. Never."
Thomas coughed. His throat felt raw.
"Do it again. Maybe we blinked weird or something."
Minho did, throwing it at the same spot, and once again, it winked out of existence.
"Maybe you weren't looking carefully other times you threw stuff over," Thomas said. "I mean, it should be impossible. Sometimes you don't look very hard for things you don't believe will or can happen."
They threw the rest of the rocks, aiming at the original spot and every inch around it. To Thomas's surprise, the spot in which the rocks disappeared proved only to be a few feet square.
"No wonder we missed it," Minho said,
furiously writing down notes and dimensions, his best attempt at a diagram.
"It's kind of small. The Grievers must barely fit through that thing."
Thomas kept his eyes riveted to the area of the invisible floating square, trying to burn the distance and location in his mind, remember exactly where it was. And when they come out, they must balance on the rim of the hole and jump over the empty space to the cliff edge. It's not that far. If I could jump it, I'm sure it's easy for them.
Minho finished drawing, then looked up at the special spot.
"How's this possible, dude? What are we looking at?"
"Like you said, it's not magic.
Must be something like our sky turning gray. Some kind of optical illusion or hologram hiding a doorway.
This place is all jacked up.
And," Thomas admitted to himself, "kind of cool." His mind craved to know what kind of technology could be behind it all.
"Yeah, jacked up is right. Come on."
Minho got up with a grunt and put on his backpack.
"Better get as much of the maze run as we can. With our new decorated sky, maybe other weird things have happened out there. We'll tell Newt and Albie about this tonight. Don't know how it helps, but at least we know now where the Shuck Grievers go."
"And probably where they come from," Thomas said as he took one last look at the hidden doorway.
"The Griever Hole."
"Yeah, good a name as any. Let's go."
Thomas sat and stared, waiting for Minho to make a move. Several minutes passed in silence, and Thomas realized his friend must be as fascinated as he was. Finally, without saying a word, Minho turned to leave. Thomas reluctantly followed, and they ran into the gray, dark maze. Thomas and Minho found nothing but stone walls and ivy. Thomas did the vine cutting and all the note-taking. It was hard for him to notice any changes from the day before, but Minho pointed out without thinking about it where the walls had moved. When they reached the final dead end, and it was time to head back home, Thomas felt an almost uncontrollable urge to bag everything and stay there overnight, see what happened. Minho seemed to sense it and grabbed his shoulder.
"Not yet, dude. Not yet."
And so they'd gone back. A somber mood rested over the glade, an easy thing to happen when all is gray. The dim light hadn't changed a bit since they'd woken up that morning, and Thomas wondered if anything would change at sunset either. Minho headed straight for the map room as they came through the west door. Thomas was surprised. He thought it was the last thing they should do.
"Aren't you dying to tell Newt and Albie about the Griever Hole?"
"Hey, we're still runners," Minho said, "and we still have a job."
Thomas followed him to the steel door of the big concrete block, and Minho turned to give him a wan smile.
"But yeah, we'll do it quick so we can talk to them."
There were already other runners milling about the room, drawing up their maps when they entered. No one said a word, as if all speculation on the new sky had been exhausted. The hopelessness in the room made Thomas feel as if he were walking through mud-thick water. He knew he should also be exhausted, but he was too excited to feel it. He couldn't wait to see Newt's and Albie's reaction to the news about the cliff. He sat down at the table and drew up the day's map based on his memory and notes, Minho looking over his shoulder the whole time, giving pointers.
"I think that hole was actually cut off here, not there."
"And watch your proportions."
"And draw straighter, you shank."
He was annoying but helpful, and 15 minutes after entering the room, Thomas examined his finished product. Pride washed through him. It was just as good as any other map he'd seen.
"Not bad," Minho said. "For a greenie, anyway."
Minho got up and walked over to the Section 1 trunk and opened it. Thomas knelt down in front of it and took out the map from the day before and held it up side by side with the one he'd just drawn.
"What am I looking for?" he asked.
"Patterns. But looking at 2 days' worth isn't going to tell you jack. You really need to study several weeks. Look for patterns. Anything."
"I know there's something there. Something that'll help us. Just can't find it yet.
Like I said, it sucks."
Thomas had an itch in the back of his mind, the same one he'd felt the very first time in this room. The maze walls, moving. Patterns. All those straight lines. Were they suggesting an entirely different kind of map? Pointing to something? He had such a heavy feeling that he was missing an obvious hint or clue. Minho tapped him on the shoulder.
"You can always come back and study your butt off after dinner, after we talk to Newt and Albie. Come on."
Thomas put the papers in the trunk and closed it, hating the twinge of unease he felt. It was like a prick in his side. Walls moving, straight lines, patterns. There had to be an answer.
"Okay, let's go."
They'd just stepped out the map room, the heavy door clanging shut behind them, when Newt and Albie walked up, neither one of them looking very happy. Thomas's excitement immediately turned to worry.
"Hey," Minho said.
"We were just..."
"Get on with it," Albie interrupted. "Ain't got time to waste.
Find anything?
Anything?"
Minho actually recoiled at the harsh rebuke, but his face seemed more confused to Thomas than hurt or angry.
"Nice to see you too."
"Yeah, we did find something, actually."
Oddly, Albie almost looked disappointed.
"'Cause this whole shuck place is falling to pieces."
He shot Thomas a nasty glare as if it were all his fault.
"What's wrong with him?"
Thomas thought, feeling his own anger light up. They'd been working hard all day, and this was their thanks?
"What do you mean?" Minho asked. "What else happened?"
Newt answered, nodding toward the box as he did so.
"Bloody supplies didn't come today. Come every week for 2 years, same time, same day. But not today."
All four of them looked over at the steel doors attached to the ground. To Thomas, there seemed to be a shadow hovering over it, darker than the gray air surrounding everything else.
"Ah, we're shucked for good now,"
Minho whispered, his reaction alerting Thomas to how grave the situation really was.
"No sun for the plants," Newt said. "No supplies from the bloody box. Yeah, I'd say we're shucked all right."
Albie had folded his arms, still glaring at the box as if trying to open the doors with his mind. Thomas hoped their leader didn't bring up what he'd seen in the changing, or anything related to Thomas, for that matter. Especially now.
"Yeah, anyway," Minho continued. "We found something weird."
Thomas waited, hoping that Newt or Albie would have a positive reaction to the news, maybe even have further information to shed light on the mystery. Newt raised his eyebrows.
"What?"
Minho took a full 3 minutes to explain, starting with the griever they followed, and ending with the results of their rock-throwing experiment.
"Must lead to where the, you know, grievers live," he said when finished.
"The griever hole,"
Thomas added. All three of them looked at him, annoyed, as if he had no right to speak. But for the first time, being treated like the greenie didn't bother him that much.
"Gotta bloody see that for myself," Newt said, then murmured, "Hard to believe."
Thomas couldn't have agreed more.
"I don't know what we can do," Minho said. "Maybe we could build something to block off that corridor."
"No way," Newt said. "Shuck things can climb the bloody walls, remember?"
"Nothing we could build would keep them out."
But a commotion outside the homestead shifted their attention away from the conversation. A group of gladers stood at the front door of the house, shouting to be heard over each other. Chuck was in the group, and when he saw Thomas and the others he ran over, a look of excitement spread across his face. Thomas could only wonder what crazy thing had happened now.
"What's going on?" Newt asked.
"She's awake!" Chuck yelled. "The girl's awake!"
Thomas's insides twisted. He leaned against the concrete wall of the map room. The girl. The girl who spoke in his head. He wanted to run before it happened again, before she spoke to him in his mind. But it was too late.
"Tom, I don't know any of these people. Come get me. It's all fading. I'm forgetting everything but you. I have to tell you things, but it's all fading."
He couldn't understand how she did it, how she was inside his head. Teresa paused, then said something that made no sense.
"The maze is a code, Tom. The maze is a code."
Chapter 36. Thomas didn't want to see her. He didn't want to see anybody. As soon as Newt set off to go and talk to the girl, Thomas silently slipped away, hoping no one would notice him in the excitement. With everyone's thoughts on the stranger waking up from her coma, it proved easy. He skirted the edge of the glade, then, breaking into a run, he headed for his place of seclusion behind the deadhead forest. He crouched in the corner, nestled in the ivy, and threw his blanket over himself, head and all. Somehow, it seemed like a way to hide from Teresa's intrusion into his mind. A few minutes passed, his heart finally calming to a slow roll.
"Forgetting about you was the worst part."
At first, Thomas thought it was another message in his head. He squeezed his fists against his ears. But no, it had been different. He'd heard it with his ears. A girl's voice. Chills creeping up his spine, he slowly lowered the blanket. Teresa stood to his right, leaning against the massive stone wall. She looked so different now, awake and alert, standing. Wearing a long-sleeved white shirt, blue jeans, and brown shoes, she looked, impossibly, even more striking than when he'd seen her in the coma. Black hair framed the fair skin of her face, with eyes the blue of pure flame.
"Tom, do you really not remember me?"
Her voice was soft, a contrast from the crazed, hard sound he'd heard from her after she first arrived, when she'd delivered the message that everything was going to change.
"You mean, you remember me?"
he asked, embarrassed at the squeak that escaped on the last word.
"Yes, but no, maybe.
She threw her arms up in disgust.
I can't explain it.
Thomas opened his mouth, then closed it without saying anything.
I remember remembering,
she muttered, sitting down with a heavy sigh. She pulled her legs up to wrap her arms around her knees.
Feelings, emotions, like I have all these shelves in my head, labeled for memories and faces, but they're empty. As if everything before this is just on the other side of a white curtain, including you. But how do you know me?
He felt like the walls were spinning around him. Teresa turned toward him.
I don't know. Something about before we came to the maze. Something about us. It's mostly empty, like I said.
You know about the maze?
Who told you?
You just woke up.
It's all very confusing right now.
She held a hand out.
But I know you're my friend.
Almost in a daze, Thomas pulled the blanket completely off and leaned forward to shake her hand.
I like how you call me Tom.
As soon as it came out, he was sure he couldn't have possibly said anything dumber. Teresa rolled her eyes.
That's your name, isn't it?
Yeah, but most people call me Thomas. Well, except Newt. He calls me Tommy. Tom makes me feel like I'm at home or something, even though I don't know what home is. He let out a bitter laugh.
Are we messed up or what?
She smiled for the first time, and he almost had to look away, as if something that nice didn't belong in such a glum and gray place, as if he had no right to look at her expression.
Yeah, we're messed up, she said. And I'm scared.
So am I, trust me. Which was definitely the understatement of the day. A long moment passed, both of them looking toward the ground.
What's...
he began, not sure how to ask it.
How did you talk to me inside my mind?
Teresa shook her head.
No idea. I can just do it, she thought to him.
Then she spoke aloud again.
It's like if you tried to ride a bicycle here, if they had one. I bet you could do it without thinking.
But do you remember learning to ride one?
No.
I mean, I remember riding one, but not learning. He paused, feeling a wave of sadness. Or who taught me?
Well,
she said, her eyes flickering as if she was embarrassed by his sudden gloom.
Anyway, it's kind of like that.
Really clears things up. Teresa shrugged.
You didn't tell anyone, did you? They'd think we're crazy.
Well, when it first happened, I did. But I think Newt just thinks I was stressed out or something. Thomas felt fidgety, like he'd go nuts if he didn't move. He stood up, started pacing in front of her.
We need to figure things out. That weird note you had about being the last person to ever come here, your coma, the fact you can talk to me telepathically. Any ideas?
Teresa followed him with her eyes as he walked back and forth.
Save your breath and quit asking. All I have are faint impressions, that you and I were important, that we were used somehow, that we're smart, that we came here for a reason. I know I triggered the ending, whatever that means.
She groaned, her face reddening.
My memories are as useless as yours.
Thomas knelt down in front of her.
No, they're not. I mean, the fact that you knew my memory had been wiped without asking me, and this other stuff. You're way ahead of me and everybody else.
Their eyes met for a long time. It looked like her mind was spinning, trying to make sense of it all.
I just don't know, she said in his mind.
There you go again, Thomas said aloud, though he was relieved that her trick didn't really freak him out anymore.
How do you do that? I just do, and I bet you can too.
Well, can't say I'm too anxious to try. He sat back down and pulled his legs up, much like she had done.
You said something to me, in my head, right before you found me over here. You said, the maze is a code.
What did you mean?
She shook her head slightly. When I first woke up, it was like I'd entered an insane asylum. These strange guys hovering over my bed, The world tipping around me? Memories swirling in my brain? I tried to reach out and grasp a few, and that was one of them. I can't really remember why I said it. Was there anything else? Actually, yeah. She pulled up the sleeve of her left arm, exposing her bicep. Small letters were written across the skin in thin black ink. What's that? He asked, leaning in for a better look. Read it yourself. The letters were messy, but he could make them out when he got close enough. Wicked is good. Thomas's heart beat faster. I've seen that word, wicked. He searched his mind for what the phrase could possibly mean. On the little creatures that live here, the beetle blades. What are those? She asked. Just little lizard-like machines that spy on us for the creators, the people who sent us here? Teresa considered that for a moment, looking off into space. Then she focused on her arm. I can't remember why I wrote this, she said, as she wet her thumb and started rubbing off the words. But don't let me forget. It has to mean something. The three words ran through Thomas's mind over and over. When did you write it? When I woke up. They had a pen and notepad next to the bed. In the commotion, I wrote it down. Thomas was baffled by this girl. First the connection he'd felt to her from the very beginning, then the mind speaking, now this. Everything about you is weird. You know that, right? Judging by your little hiding spot, I'd say you're not so normal yourself. Like living in the woods, do you? Thomas tried to scowl, then smiled. He felt pathetic and embarrassed about hiding. Well, you look familiar to me, and you claim we're friends. Guess I'll trust you. He held out his hand for another shake, and she took it, holding on for a long time. A chill swept through Thomas that was surprisingly pleasant. All I want is to get back home, she said, finally letting go of his hand. Just like the rest of you. Thomas's heart sank as he snapped back to reality and remembered how grim the world had become. Yeah, well, things pretty much suck right about now. The sun disappeared and the sky's gray. They didn't send us the weekly supplies. Looks like things are going to end one way or another. But before Teresa could answer, Newt was running out of the woods. How in the... he said as he pulled up in front of them. Albie and a few others were right behind him. Newt looked at Teresa. How'd you get here? Medjack said you were there 1 second and bug and gone the next. Teresa stood up, surprising Thomas with her confidence. Guess he forgot to tell the little part about me kicking him in the groin and climbing out the window. Thomas almost laughed as Newt turned to an older boy standing nearby, whose face had turned bright red. Congrats, Jeff, Newt said. You're officially the first guy here to get your butt beat by a girl. Teresa didn't stop. Keep talking like that, and you'll be next. Newt turned back to face them, but his face showed anything but fear. He stood, silently, just staring at them. Thomas stared back, wondering what was going through the older boy's head. Albie stepped up. I'm sick of this. He pointed at Thomas's chest, almost tapping it. I want to know who you are, who this Shank girl is, and how you guys know each other. Thomas almost wilted. Albie, I swear, she came straight to you after waking up, shuckface. Anger surged inside Thomas, and worry that Albie would go off like Ben had. So what? I know her, she knows me, or at least we used to. That doesn't mean anything. I can't remember anything. Neither can she. Albie looked at Teresa. What did you do? Thomas, confused by the question, glanced at Teresa to see if she knew what he meant, but she didn't reply. What did you do? Albie screamed. First the sky, now this. I triggered something, she replied in a calm voice. Not on purpose, I swear it. The ending. I don't know what it means. What's wrong, Newt? Thomas asked, not wanting to talk to Albie directly. What happened? But Albie grabbed him by the shirt. What happened? I'll tell you what happened, Shank. Too busy making lovey eyes to bother looking around? To bother noticing what freaking time it is? Thomas looked at his watch, realizing with horror what he'd missed.
knowing what Albie was about to say before he said it.
"The walls, you shuck! The doors!